Okay. All right. I just want to introduce the program, so to speak. Can I let Rabbi Cohen really speak first? I just want to explain why we're making this. It's not exactly the Shloshim for Rav Shia. Rav Shia was Nifter, I think, Tes Zayin or Tes Vav, maybe Tes Vav of this summer. And I just want to explain a little bit, just as an introduction. Shia learned in, he learned with born in Europe. I think it said in the papers he was 94. I don't know if that's accurate or not. He learned by Rav Ochanan. After Rav Ochanan, and he graduated there, he went to learn by Rav Baruch Ber, who was his Rebbe Muvik. I think he told me he learned there 7 years, to my recollection. He always quoted Rav Baruch Ber as his Rebbe Muvik. Then when the World War II broke out, he joined the Mir Yeshiva, ended up in Shanghai. And after the war, he came to Shanghai, the Mir came to America. He used to learn at Chafetz Chaim. He got to be very close with Rosh Yeshiva, the Tzal. Then he came to Eretz Yisrael. He learned in the Mir. I think he said there was no minyan there in the Mir even. And Rav Leza Yudo asked him to learn there. Got close to Rav Leza Yudo. And then eventually made his own little yeshiva. So basically he sat his whole year life and learned. The yeshiva held, yeshiva used to encourage guys to go learn with him. And yeshiva held he was definitely one of the Gedolei Ador, but I just want to clarify that phrase. You say one of the Gedolei Ador is a very ambiguous phrase, because one of the Gedolei Ador could be one of the thousand. One of the Gedolei Ador means one out of the handful of Gedolei Ador. You know, if you had probably the biggest Abkonim of the door, once after, you know, Rav Moshe and Rav Yaakov, that generation was Nifter, I assume Rashi would have said he was among the, if you had it, among the top, you know, I don't want to say, you know, but the handful, the first top five, maybe less, maybe closer, that, you know, the Gedolei Ador in Amkus HaTorah, maybe more than that, the Gadas. Rashi basically learned all day B'Iyun. It was a very unusual thing, learned very slowly, meticulously, a tremendous masmid. He had a special connection with Chafetz Chaim. First, he was very close with Rosh Yeshiva. Also, because he learned so slowly, the average Israeli fellow did not really get along with Rav Shia so much. And he learned privately with people. A lot of the people he learned privately were from Chafetz Chaim because they clicked together. I personally learned for him approximately for 16 years, once a week for a few hours. But there were many other people who also learned with him. Rabbi Cohen learned with him. Rabbi Cohen's son learned with him for many years. There were many people that learned with him and from the yeshiva. So I think there's this dual reason why we're having this, or maybe a few reasons why we're having this Sasifa. One is one of the Gedolei Ador, which, you know, we held he was one of the Gedolei Ador, really, with his Stamin Inyan to make a Hesped. And being he was a little bit kept to himself, I'm not sure how many Hespedim there are in the world for him, so it's an Inyan at least here where people have some Shaykhs to make a Hesped. Two, there was a special kesher to the yeshiva. And three, I personally had a very close kesher with him. Okay, with that introduction, I just want to call Rabbi Cohen. I just have to publicly, besides all my other hakaras that told Rabbi Cohen, the only way I got to Rav Shia, Rabbi Cohen introduced him to me, or me to him, you know, when I was in Eretz Yisrael in 1971. It was at the after Pesach, Rav Shia started giving a shir in his yeshiva in Nedarim. Yeshiva was there in Nedarim. He was giving to around 3-4 people. And Rabbi Cohen suggested that I join that shir. And that's how I met him, that continued that relationship, Baruch Hashem, since then for about over 40 years. So then just another Karas HaTov that I have to Rabbi Cohen, and now to Kovet to ask him to speak. I just wanted to try and say over a few stories about Rav Shia. Everyone likes stories. The problem is that I don't have too many stories, mainly because Rav Shia you couldn't basically talk to except about learning. Especially in my youth, I used to love to talk Hashgafa and Shaitas, but Rav Shia almost never fell for the bait, and you could never get him into anything else except learning. I do want to give a seer of the way I viewed Rav Shia's godliness. When I mentioned I was learning in this, I went to the shir. So we're there in the shir. So he comes over to me one day. He says, "You know, maybe we should continue learning for Shabbos. Shabbos is day off. Shiva, no." He says, "Come to my house." I say, "What about the other guys in the shir?" "They won't know." Okay. So I come to his house. First of all, he tells me the wrong address, but that's all right. That's Agav. He lived on a rechayiv called Gesher Achayim, but this is a little, the chassid, he wouldn't say they lived on Gesher Achayim, because Gesher Achayim is a street about someone who's nifter. So he had his own address on his house. It was Rashi 68. He was about a block and a half off Rashi, but he liked that address better, so they were mechadesh their own address. That's all right, Eretz Yisrael. But anyway, so I come to his house, and we learned, and that started a minhag. I used to go to his house for years. And the picture, this repeated itself every time until his kids got older. We used to sit down to learn, and we'd go over his son then, his son's name was Chaim. Say, "Chaim, come sit down and learn Mishnayos." And Chaim was very obedient. He would sit down right next to his father and learn Mishnayos. Even though he didn't want to learn, because it happened to be, I remember that those weeks, there was Shabbos protest right in front of his windows, and it was a Lebedik. It was a lot of fun to go outside. But Chaim was very obedient. His father called him to sit down and learn. He sat down and learned. There's a reason why Chaim was very obedient. Because every time we learned, about 2 minutes after we started learning, Chaim would just stand up and walk out of the room, and Rav Shia never knew. Never knew. He was just out of it. It was not such a joke to me. Like, I knew he was going to get up. Chaim knew he was going to get up. We used to learn from, I think it was 2:30, and we learned till the latest minyan possible for Mincha. It made no difference how long Shabbos was. We dive into a certain minyan we always went to, but he was totally oblivious. You know, I had the same thing I used to do. When I came in, Rebbetzin, and Alo Shalom, used to offer, put down a plate of cake. So the first time I made a mistake, I took a piece of cake. But then I had to be, let's say, a Safek Shear, you know, who knows what a shite of him is, of a Shear, of a Brach Achreina. And then I had to make the Brach Achreina out loud. And I always tell people that was the first time I decided on a new Chumrah that I only make a Brach Achreina with a sitter. Because when you asked me to make the Brach Achreina out loud, all of a sudden I realized I'm not sure I know all the words properly. But so after that, I decided I didn't want to eat the cake anymore. So I had a simple solution. I put down the cake and said, "Take a piece." Okay, let's first, you know, soon. And then he always forgot about it. You know, that was it. There was one time I got caught. I'm really changing the topic, but it's on one time someone else came in the middle while we were learning. So we got interrupted. So I got up and said, "Okay, I'll leave." But meanwhile, I got up to go, and since we got interrupted, it wasn't in the middle of the learning, so he noticed that the cake wasn't eaten. So he told me, "Oh, you didn't eat anything." So I stopped, and okay, so I picked up a piece. I don't know, was hoping probably it was less than a kezias, but I knew I was in for trouble, okay? And I made a bracha, and I ate the piece of cake. He tells me, no good. No good. He says, why no good? He tells me a story. It's one of the few times he told me a story. He says that in Europe, the minhag was that when you wanted to get smicha, you didn't just go for a bechina. You would go live in the Rav's house, and you would, any shaitas that came up for that whole week, the Rav would see how you paskin, he would talk to you and learn the whole week. And then if you did okay for the whole week, you would live with the Rav and all paskin, all the shaitas, he would give you smicha. So if a person went to a certain gado, he said he wanted smicha from this gado, he went to his city, lived in his house. At the end of the week, the gado tells him, mazel tov, I'm going to give you smicha. Takes out about a whatever, schnapps, whatever it was, pours him a l'chaim, guy makes a bracha. The Rav says, how can I give smicha to someone who was standing up and he makes a bracha? So, right, that was his message to me. Like, lack of, stood up when you made a bracha. Lack of shivas of the bracha. Anyway, but he was, mamish, there was nothing else in his world. It was total oblivious. There was almost, you could not talk about anything else except learning. It was learning. There was no concept of Shabbos, like I mentioned. There was no concept of Ben Azmanim. I was in Israel as a Beis Medrash fellow, and there was a few guys. We had a group, and we used to come, and then came Pesach. So Pesachification. So the other guys didn't show up. They went to Tiyul. Like, he couldn't understand. Like, where are they? He said, oh, they went to Ben Azmanim. What? You know, it's not Pesach. I was there once. I remember I once came. We used to learn, I say, too, Mincha. And I told them, we never finished a sugya in one sitting. Because, like I can't mention, it was very, very slow. So in one sugya, it took weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. But I used to tell him that I had to go back to yeshiva, or he assumed I had to go back to yeshiva for Shara Shudas to hear the shmooze. So he would learn until Mincha, we would walk to this shul with the latest minion, he would wash Ramosi in the shul, and I would go wherever I would go. Sometimes back to yeshiva, sometimes went to a blazer for Shara Shudas, but whatever it was. But once it was during, I think, I don't remember, it was Pesach, Sukkot, he says, oh, no shmooze this week. Ben Azmanim. So we can finish the sugya. So Beli Guzma, we stayed from 2:30, except for the break for Mincha and a quick shower shudas, till after 11 o'clock. He did not ask me if I wanted to stay. That was, to me, that was the biggest chiddush. It wasn't just that we learned 8 hours straight, without breaks, basically, except for that one little break in the middle. But, you know, he didn't ask me, do you want to stay? No, it was pashut. You know, we're in the middle of a sugya. You know, so we got to keep on going. I was chowishing then. I mean, my head was splitting, but he was just, till we finish. He was a total hasmada. And we said it. It was very, so Rabbi Kinnarik once told me also, he says, they say we go slow. You see, I was very close with his Rabbi, he used to, but it was always what Rav Baruch Beer would say on this sugya was always the most important. I'm going to tell one story with Hashkafa. I think it's important. I'm going to get in trouble here because it was one Naisa which occurred where Rav Shia had a major disagreement with Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Cohen already said that we have our Messiah. But I think it's kedai to hear the machlekes because there is such a thing, is that even when you disagree, but you have to understand where they disagree. There was a shaila that came to Rav Shia, somehow I was involved, and I was the go-between to ask the shaila, and the shaila was back between Rav Shia and Rav Shiva. They were very close, friends it happened to be, but they got into this disagreement in Hashkafa on a certain issue. And it was very fascinating, except that being that I was a go-between, I felt like a ping pong ball because each one was slugging me up. Basically, the shaita was really about, what is a person after a person, you know, supposed to do, after, you know, the ultimate goal of a person learning in yeshiva. And as we know, the yeshiva shita very strongly is that a person should learn in yeshiva a certain number of years, and then he should go into Arbat HaSaira. Yeshiva was very, very adamant, even to the strangest places, whether it's Los Angeles or other places, you know, doesn't make a difference. Rav Shia told me, so he told me a story. This is one of the few times he told a story, see? He says that when he came to America, and I believe he said he lived in Rav Ruvain's house, I'm not 100% sure. He was single still, and this is after he came from Shanghai, and he decided he was going to open up communist yeshiva in America. And he said Rav Ruvain promised him, Rav Ruvain was yeshiva in Tar Vadas, and he promised him Talmidim. And he says that summer before he went to open the yeshiva, he traveled to Eretz Yisrael, and he went to the Chazon Ish, and he told him he's opening up a yeshiva in America, and he asked the Chazon Ish for a bracha. And the Chazon Ish told him, you stay in Eretz Yisrael. That was it. So he says he's dropped his whole plans, and he stayed in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe went, I don't know if he went back or didn't go back to Yiddish stuff. I don't think he went back. I think they shipped it to him, whatever. But whatever it is, he stayed in Eretz Yisrael. Now, from our perspective, like Rabbi Cohen, basically, here he has the ability to open one of the early yeshivas in America. Could have been, we said, big marbis, Talmidim. He basically stayed in Eretz Yisrael, and except for a small circle of people, he was not known. But he was so happy with this. This is what the Chazon Ish told him. And the way he interpreted it is that the ultimate goal in life is to be a Talmud Chacham. And this was his disagreement with the Reshiva. Reshiva felt that the ultimate purpose is to be a Marbis Torah. And he felt, based on the Chazon Ish's directives, that the ultimate goal, at least a person who has the capacity, who can be a Gadol Hador, I take it back, not to be a Talmud Chacham. The ultimate goal is to be a Gadol Hador. That would be more accurate. In other words, he felt that there's a special level of learning Torah. When someone learns Torah, the Ian, Kol HaTorah Kula, it's a different Torah. And it's a different Torah which has a different hashpah on the whole world. It's Mekayim. Torah has a tremendous hashpah on the world. And it's, they say, we say Rashi and Breishis, and no Barasi, if there's without the Torah, Hashem wouldn't have created the world. So he said, which Torah? It's not just anyone's Torah. It's a Chazon Ish's Torah. A Gadol's Torah is a different Torah. It's a special person. It's a more shlemis, just like you can do you can shake a lulav. There's a more mehudir dika esrig and a more mehudir dika lulav. It's a more mehudir dika mitzvah. A person who knows Kol HaTorah Kula, property, the Ion, it's a different Liman HaTorah. And that's what he felt was the directive for his. That was his life goal. That was his mission in life. To learn Kol HaTorah Kula, to know it well, to be one of the Yechidei Skula that the world stands on, that they're learning Torah. And, okay, this was his disagreement with Reshiva. Reshiva did not agree. But the Maitha, I think that the Reshiva did not agree, not because he did not appreciate the value of Godless Batoira. It's because Reshiva had this Shita that he had this super appreciation for our Batzis Torah. But I think what we can learn from here is the tremendous value of just learning Torah, especially on a higher level. That sometimes we only look at, well, what are the benefits? What came out? How many Talmidim did he have? How many, I saw there was one little write-up in a newspaper about him. It says he wrote a sefer. He didn't write, you know, he did. At the end of his life, the kids put out his notes. It was a sefer. But that wasn't his life. You know, the only thing they're interested in is, oh, did he write a sefer? Did he have Talmidim? Was he world famous? The Iker accomplishment was that he was a Gadol HaTorah. That's such an amazing accomplishment. And we somehow don't have a sufficient appreciation of the value of being a godless. You know, that goal. Now, obviously, and that, you know, we have to follow Rashiva. You know, what Rashiva felt, that godless b'tzayra is nitche for abatzayra. But sometimes there's no stira. Sometimes you can be learning in yeshiva, there's no stira. You're supposed to be learning. And very often, even when you left yeshiva, there's no stira. But the appreciation that godless b'tzayra is so valuable, that was, at least the way I understood it, that was his whole life. His whole life was Torah, 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 and to become that Gadol b'Torah in the total Amkes HaTorah. Just a few other points. Rashiya also had an amazing, Rabbi Kohn said, a Tmimist. He was a... He did come from a Hasidic background. I believe he said that he had a friend when he was a neighbor who was Rav Chaim's grandson. He lived in, and he was going off to learn yeshiva, so he was jealous. So he decided he wanted to go also. No one in his peers did. So his father asked the Ger Rebbe, the Ger Hasidim, and he said it's okay. So he went off to learn. But he had this Tmimis, also this Hasidish warmth. He was very, very warm. Unusually warm, I have to say that. He was an unusually warm person. And he had an unusual Tmimis. Tmimis means, even as far as Emunah. You know, there are many Chazals that superficially seem a little strange to us. And the basic approach today is, you say, oh, the Chazal doesn't mean exactly when it says a day, it means it's a mashal, it means Hashem's, from Hashem's perspective, it's a mashal to this, it's a Dabi Derech Remes. We basically take tremendous liberties with certain Chazals. Can't be. He told me once, every Chazal, if it says it, that's it. He says, you don't understand it. A lot of things you don't understand. He said that if people 100 years ago, if you would tell them that there were viruses in the air, that you can, you know, that there's microscopic viruses floating around in the air and you breathe them in and you can kill you, they think you're crazy. He says, now we know it's true. He says, there's going to be millions of things we don't know. Because you don't know, it sounds strange to you. So what? So, if it says it in Chazal, it's true. That's it. It's like just a tmimis, a pashas. Even chazaka. He said, Chazal say chazaka works? It works. You don't understand why it works? Okay? You don't understand. Chazaka is a beer. You know, they didn't go with this. Didn't beer. Chazaka is a beer. Why is it a beer? I don't know why it's a beer. It's a beer. If Chazal say it, it's true. He also had this tremendous tmimis, which was good in belief in Gedolei Torah. It was one time, whatever, without getting into the episode, but he expressed to me, like, in Eretz Yisrael, you always have, Gedolei are much more verbal, so to speak, in their opinions. You have the signs of Das Torah. And in the same way, you have many people are more like ignoring the proclamations. So he was saying, the Gadol didn't really mean it. Just that kind of, he had to sign it because of the kind of, a lot of cynicism. My Gadol doesn't hold that way. He was very upset. He says, a Gadol, if Avshach, if Rabbi Yoshev, if the Stipler came out with something and signed his name to something, he said, well, but he didn't say it for, he meant it for certain people, but not for me. You know, whatever these, you see, as far as he says, this is called, you know, every word of Chazal, Galosan, is a Galei Eish. You know, how can you not listen to one of the Gedolei Torah? To him, it was like it was a plea. The people were not listening to Gedolei Torah. They came out with a proclamation, you gotta listen. No shaita. Just a different Indian. I mentioned this always in the Musar Vad, but as long as we're talking about Shia, we used to walk to this shul. I say it was for Mincha, it was the same minion for Mincha. Used to go every week. There was a nice number of people diving there, and there was a number of very chashra people diving there. And every week we would walk to shul, And Rav Shia would ask me, did I get an aliyah that week? And being that was the year the yeshiva was in Israel, and I was still a bacher, and I think they had a rule in the Gaboyim that they only gave the aliyahs on Shabbos to the married people and the people in the neighborhood. So I never got aliyah on Shabbos in the yeshiva. So every week I told him, no. He said, oh, you got to get an aliyah. So he would walk into the shul, and he would walk over to the gabbai and tell him, give Binyamin aliyah. So the gabbai, the gadol, goes over and tells you, you gotta do something. So he did it. So every week for the whole year, I got the aliyah on mincha for shlishi. And I, as a bashful person, I was going crazy because I had all the strikes against me. I didn't belong, wasn't a member of the shul. I was an American. I was young. I was 25. I looked probably like I was much younger. And here the shul and all these chasha people, I knew some of them. I recognized some of them. And here, okay, once in a while you get an aliyah. But every single Shabbos you chop the aliyah, like, you know, what is this? Chazeris. I was so uncomfortable. Finally, at the end of the year, we walk into the shul and the gabbai wasn't there. And instead there was some chasidish kid who was running the minyan. And I could see Rav Shia's wall, like, oh, what's he going to do? And I was, oh, Baruch Hashem. And he said, it'll be 1 week, I won't get the aliyah. Okay? And sure enough, this boy giving out the aliyah, he gives his friend Cohen, and he gives his friend, he goes over to his friend, gives his friend Levi, and he goes over to his friend to give him Yisrael. And all of a sudden, Rav Shia runs up to the bima and says, Yamo Binyamin Shlishi. That was... So he was so, I have the mitzvah for you. He was hacham. He told me later, there was that same thing. There was remember that label, Lisker had a brisk, yeshiva, and they brought this giant chawa to the, they had a fancy brisk, and they had a nice dais, and they, Lisker cut the challah, and someone wanted to take it off the table from the dais to cut it up to give it out. So he went then and he said, I gotta take a piece. He basically was gonna rip off with his hands. He said, no, I think it was Rabbi Yachas, I think, I'll bring you back. He says, no, hacham lev yikach mitzvahs. And he grabs a piece. That was his, he was a mitzvah, you gotta grab a mitzvah. Just one last thing with his, something that I noticed when I was learning with him, he wasn't well already at the last years. This was already, 12, 13 years ago. I don't know. I wasn't really, as I was here, I wasn't that much connected except Baruch Hashem. He was back a little bit this last month. But at that time already, he wasn't so well. He had trouble walking. It was very hard for him to walk. It was painful, I believe. Very hard to walk. So he used to learn. There were times I would come to learn, he would be in his pajamas. He couldn't get dressed. He would learn. He had a little robe on, whatever. But he was basically in his pajamas. We were learning. But you have to go, in the middle of the learning, you would have to go to the bathroom. And after the bathroom, in an Israeli style, there's a sink outside the bathroom. But then he had to make an Asher Yotzar. For the Asher Yotzar, he was always makbid, he would put on a hat. And to get a hat, he didn't have a hat next to the sink. The hat was the other side of the house. Whenever it was a small apartment, but still, when it went, to get, it was a very, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't, that wasn't too far. It was like from one side of the room to the other. But for a person who had very painful to walk, it took probably about a few minutes. It took a few minutes just to walk in the little teeny steps to get to his hat. It was makbid every time, we ask people for benching to wear a hat. Seems to be such a difficult nisayon. He was makbid even when he was sick. He was very, very makbid. I assume that he was makbid his whole life, that he would never make a bracha, without a hat. So he would walk, Ashiyatza you do make standing up, just agat, but that's brought down. But he would walk to the other side of the room, get his hat off the hat rack, put it on, make the Asher Yotzar, and then he would, put his hat back and walk back across the room to where we were learning. So it was a whole asik of walking to the hat and back to the table, because he had this akbada that to make the brachas wearing his hat. Okay, these were just, they say there was regrets for the, they were, I don't want to say regrets, you know, we learned Baruch Hashem, but regrets for the, besides learning, I'm sure there was a tremendous amount of other knowledge, information here, but he was always learning. And that was his learning slowly, the Iyun. Right, Rabbi Cohen was correct that he knew Kol HaTorah Kula B'Iyun. It was also tremendously dovek to his Rebbe. It was, the Vekas Rav Baruch Bir was amazing. He came once to the yeshiva to visit the Rosh Yeshiva. I have a tape somewhere, I don't know where it is, but basically he and the Rosh Yeshiva were swiping stories. The Rosh Yeshiva would tell him a story about Rav David, and Rav Shia would type it, would tell him a story about Rav Baruch Bir. And then they were going back and forth, each one trying to top the other. Well, my Rebbe did this. My Rebbe did this. We had a tremendous kesher to Rav Baruch Bir. That was the pictures he had hanging in his house and was hanging in his yeshiva. He had cut out from newspaper articles, little paper and pictures of Rav Baruch Bir. They were hanging. That was his connection. So Be'ezus Hashem, as Rabbi Cohen said, we should, this should be an inspiration to us, at least to motivate us to delve in deeper and to strive for a godless b'toira. And Be'ezus Hashem, this should help us, Be'ezus Hashem, all of us, to have a zikui in the Yimei HaDin.